the Saturday Light Brigade. I've got Zori here. Now you can say hi. Hang on. Now you can say hi.
Hi.
Can you hear yourself? You should be
so.
Able to. Yes, you're on the radio. How old are you?
I'm 9 years old.
And your name is Zori. Where do you go to school?
I go to Linden.
I've been to Linden. Do you like it there?
I like it.
It's a nice school. What subjects do you like?
I like reading, math, science, social studies.
I should have said what subjects don't you like. It sounds like you like everything.
I do.
Is there a book that you're reading now? Just for fun, if not in school?
Well, I like to read books a little.
So you read a lot?
I read a lot.
Sounds like you do. What are you learning how to do in math right now?
Adding and subtracting.
Excellent. So are you doing two-digit numbers?
Yes. Yes, sir.
That's a lot to do. Would you like to say hi to anybody who might be listening? Any family members or friends?
Well, I have a little baby brother.
What's your little baby brother's name?
Zayn.
Zayn. So you're
Zayn.
Zayn.
Zayn is ends with the M. Zayn.
Zayn. So you've got two Z's, and your dad is Ezra. In his name. So I like the Z theme that's going on. It's nice to have you here. And, I'm assuming this is your dad. Is this your daddy?
Yes, sir.
I thought so. And that would be Leslie Ezra Smith, who is going to be performing in our next hour. I hope you can be with us here at the show that gets your weekend off
wow.
to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. I was starting to say it probably does not surprise you, that I really am a fan of those who can use their voice and their creativity to create imagery and scenes right before your very ears as a spoken word artist. And it's a real pleasure. We have Leslie Ezra Smith here with us. And thank you for being here. First of all, it's a pleasure to have you aboard, and I'm glad you brought your daughter too. It's fun to have you here, young lady. And I'm curious to learn a little bit just about you, where you're from, where you came up, and how you became to be the man you are today.
Oh, wow. Okay, so born and bred Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and grew up primarily on the east side of town, Homewood, East Liberty. Primarily lived in a couple other neighborhoods, but that's where I mostly grew up in. Attended Reisenstein Middle School and then Malines Middle School, and then went to Westinghouse High School, where I found theater. Well, theater found me. There was a theater company called Arch Productions that was a school touring company that were presenting works dealing with some of the situations that were going on in the mid-90s, a lot of the gang violence that was going on. But we also spoke about domestic violence, children of alcoholics, teen pregnancy, all types of things. And we would go to middle schools and high schools and present these plays. And then after the plays were over, we were given microphones and we would go out to the audience and take the questions. And it was a pretty cool experience. It came at a beautiful time in my life. It came to present some beauty in my life at a time where there was a lot of things going on. I ended up dropping out of school due to a lot of the violence and the stress that was caused by it. But that was giving me an outlet during that time to perform and still stay focused and develop my talent at the time, which also gave me the initiative to go back to school improve my life. So I still ended up going to college next year to Cheney University of Pennsylvania. Before I left, I was kind of doing hip-hop performances. I was into hip-hop. I had a friend who was doing spoken word poetry here at the time where they were calling it performance poetry. I kind of liked what I saw when I went to Cheney University. I had some friends who were already in the thick scene in Philadelphia performing, and just got really moved by it and began to attend open mics. And then our friends and I, we created our own open mic at the campus, and came back to Pittsburgh, and a place called the Shadow Lounge opened up in Pittsburgh. That became like kind of a sanctuary for me. I began to go there and just attend our open mics and started getting on the microphone and started performing and fumbling with the papers and dropping them and trying to, you know, memorize pieces and going through all the ups and downs of developing the talent. But, you know, I kept going and found out that I loved it, you know, and just kept on working at it. And so spoken word and theater began to become my big passion in my life to where I'm at now.
Do you remember when you go back to the Arch, it was Arch Theater
Arch,
Company,
yeah.
Or Arch, did it take some courage to be talking in front of others, or do you think, did you always have a little bit of that in you?
You know, it's funny, like in elementary school, I definitely was very shy, but when it came to telling stories, that's where I would kind of get out of my shyness. So I had a library teacher named Ms. Eichner, who I really give her a lot of credit for helping me kind of not even having to deal with stage fright or any of those things, because storytelling became kind of a sacred place for me. She would, to me, she looked like the main image that we have of a librarian. You know, she wore these little sweaters. She had these glasses with the strings hanging off of it. And she was the sweetest, kindest lady in the world. And she would read to our class. And she would play all the voices of the characters. And we'd just really be into it.
This was at Westinghouse?
This is at elementary school. This is East Hills Elementary School. Where I went. And she, at the end of her storytelling, she had a stack of books on each table. And she would tell us to pick a book from that stack and read. But the beautiful thing was is that we can read anywhere in the library. We can read on top of a table, under a table. We could, you know, but you had to really be reading, because she will come around and she will kneel down and she'll say, okay, tell me about your story.
Well, that's great.
Why do you think he did that? Well, how would you have reacted?
So where did
that?
You go? Did you go? Know? Did you have a place you liked to? That you
oh,
preferred?
There was. She had these closets where usually you would hang coats at, but she took the doors off of the closets and we can actually sit back there, and she had little pillows and we would relax and we would read.
What a perceptive woman, because right. Kids like to sort of hide.
Absolutely.
Like,
and to me, she really, in hindsight, she was really kind of giving me my first kind of acting training, you know, where I would read something and I would critically think about it, you know. And she made it fun and she made it relax. And so as I got older, I began to internalize that process. And anything I read, I would end up playing a voice. I would end up going into character, anything, you know. So if I'm in class and people are reading, like, I just couldn't wait for the teacher to call my name. Like, please call me, please call me. And they would call me, and I would just start playing the voices. And, wow. You know, and I have friends, you know, they would laugh and, you know, and tease. But in my mind, I didn't mind that, because in my mind, one, it was one of the few areas where I was becoming confident in doing it in front of people with no fear. And two, I knew that I was going to remember everything that I read, because I remember how I read it. So when it came to take the test, I would pass it with flying colors, you know. And so that was the one area where I wasn't afraid. So when it came to the stage, there really wasn't any fear. There really wasn't no stage fright or anything.
That's something. And, yeah. You know, the idea of wanting to be called on, I'm sure there's right. A time in your life when you may not have wanted to be called on.
Right. So that was definitely a paradigm shift, you know, because like I said, you know, I was shy, I was teased and little things. And so being called on sometimes wasn't cool. But when it came to reading, I always wanted to be called on, you know.
Now, Westinghouse High School.
Yes.
Gave us Billy Porter.
Yes.
And Patricia Prattis Jennings.
Yes.
Among many other people.
Many.
It's had to be very inspirational for you to look at that wall of fame the house.
Goodness.
And you see
yes.
Just an amazing range of artists from all generations.
Absolutely. It's definitely a beautiful thing to see, to be able to walk through the hallways and, you know, see these pictures of past and present, you know. And I think that's what I loved about it as well, because it wasn't just, you know, those who came back in 1955 and 19, it was also people who were doing things today as well. So it was definitely motivating. And, you know, I always was walking through the hallways like, man, I'm going to get my picture up on here, you know, one day, you know. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, if you ever have the chance to go to Pittsburgh Westinghouse in Homewood, make sure you look at the walls in the hall. It's amazing. There must be at least 60 or pictures of just amazing men and artists. Women that came through. Now, Ezra will be here at the Children's Museum next Saturday, the 17th, and then Sunday, the 18th, and Martin Luther King Day on the 19th. Performing, and one reason we wanted to have him here today is so you could meet him in advance of that, but also if you can't be there, you'll get a chance through radio to hear some of his art. And I think you have a scene and a monologue for us today. What would you like to do first? And then I thought maybe we'd take a little break and then have you do the second one.
Okay. I think I'll do the spoken word.
Okay, and would you prefer to be standing, or either's fine?
Yeah, I think for this, I'll sit.
Okay.
The next one, I'll stand up.
And I don't know if you need to set it up or not. I'll just turn it over to you. This is Ezra Smith.
Okay. So this is an actual poem that is in the play. As I describe the play later on in the setup of the play, You'll see why it's included in the play. But this piece right here is called Circles and Squares, and it goes like this. I've got circles and squares. Circles and squares parading against the sunset of my mind is time. Time winds down for sunshine glows in the twilight zones with shores of water currents vibrating against the banks of our souls. I've got circles and squares parading against the sunset of my mind as time. Time winds down for sunshine glows in the twilight zones with shores of water currents vibrating against the banks of our souls and beauty. Beauty is the word used to describe this night when the moon reflects the creative thoughts of the stars upon humanity's greatness. You see, I stake this consciously to bring to your awareness that I love you for you. You are love that we all keep searching for throughout and through in this universal scheme that I'm trying to present to you in these here words. But words are symbols of symbols. They're twice removed from reality. So how am I to present my truth to you? I know not how, but I do know how to be free. Free to free you and me to release all thoughts of bondage. It's keeping us down, surrounded by purple thoughts clothed in white that excite my atoms to explode within the brightness of the day. I pray and pray for a new day to be born again, not into sin as I grin and smile at the gods, which are the feelings of joy that I implore to be one with you. And I'm feeling like, oftentimes, terrified and frightened by the brightness of the sun. I'm now celebrating its existence in my life, and I'm truly dancing for the first time in an unexplored corner of the universe, smiling and sweating with deep, deep, heavy breathing, effortlessly floating beyond purple rainstorms and yellow colors reflecting in Orion's belt, holding up the pants of Sirius, and it feels good. So good to just relax and breathe, suspend my belief system of ego, fearful thoughts related to the thunder of my heart, and stand it up, it appears to my soul is a natural mystic blowing through the air, helping me to understand the philosophy of true love. Yes, all you got to do is say yes, and I'm yours forever and ever, amen. See, I'm a prayer affirmed and fulfilled before you ask, after you ask, and even when you do not ask. Yes, this love presented to you is truly unconditional, permissible, always, in always, unimaginable, and believable. Just open your arms wide and give this love away, and you will receive it too. For a gift is only a gift when you share it. Therefore, I'm not afraid to receive you anymore, because now I know to receive you is to receive me. And that's love, y'all. That's love.
Here's a legend in the making. Zori, you're going to sing for us, eh? And can you tell me, some people might just be tuning in, so can you tell me your name again?
Zori.
And how old are you?
8. I'm at 9.
When's your birthday?
My birthday is on December 30th.
So you just had a birthday. My birthday is on December 7th, and Ricky's birthday in there, she's my wife, is January 28th, so we're all born around the same time. What's the name of the song you're going to sing? Is it
Superstar.
Superstar, are you ready?
Yes, sir.
I'm ready. So here is Zori with Superstar.
Okay. If you are what you say you are, superstar, and have a fear, that's a ear, and a lots of awe, and what a show, oh, 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 yeah.
You have a very pretty voice. Do you like to sing? Do you sing at school or in church or?
Well, I sing at the concert last Wednesday.
There was a concert for your school?
It's in December.
That's very nice. Have you ever thought about what you'd like to be when you grow up?
I thought so.
What do you think you might like to be?
A doctor.
How come?
Because I like to work in a doctor equipment.
You must really like to help people too, I bet. Do you?
I like to.
Well, you have a beautiful voice, and we're going to have your dad, Leslie Ezra Smith, join us again in just a couple minutes. Thank you for singing. You sounded so beautiful.
Thank you.
Ezra Smith, spoken word artist, actor, just a genuine person, and I'm so glad you're here today. Some folks are just tuning in and haven't had a chance to meet you yet, but Ezra grew up in the East Hills, East End areas of Pittsburgh. He closes schools. He goes to schools and then they close. He goes to Reisenstein and then they tear it down and turn it into another Google. He goes to Pittsburgh Malians and it becomes University Prep at Pittsburgh. I'm just teasing, but Westinghouse has stood the test of time. His daughter is here too. You have a brother, huh?
I have a brother.
What's your brother's name?
Zain.
And how do you spell your name?
Z-A-I-M.
Z-A-I-M is your brother, Zaim, or Zaim?
Zaim.
Zaim. Should have quit while I was ahead. How do you spell your name?
Z-U-R-I.
Z-U-R-I. Zori. And how old is your brother?
He's one month.
Do you help to take care of him at all?
I help to take care of him. Well, he can crawl on us, and he's trying to walk.
And are you helping?
I'm helping.
That's great. It must be nice to have a baby brother. I am a baby brother. I don't have any brothers and sisters younger than me. I always wondered what that would be like.
Oh.
But just me and two older brothers. Well, let's talk with your dad some more. I know you're out hosting open stages from time to time and open mics. Anything coming up that we should make a note of? We'll talk about the Children's Museum, too, in a minute. But anything that's happening that folks, where they might be able to catch you?
Well, I just ended my my open mic series that I was co-hosting with a fellow named Venora Alexander. We had an open mic series that was going on at the Hillhouse Kaufman Center and other various places of the city. This year, I kind of wanted to start focusing more on my theater aspect and getting my one-man show out more on a national scale is what I've been wanting to focus on this year. As far as open mics or where you might be able to catch me, I probably will start competing in the Poetry Slam competitions that the Still City Slam does in the city, I think, every Tuesday evening. So this is, a plug for them that goes on every Tuesday at Capri Pizza in East Liberty, right on the corner of Penn and North Highland. I want to say the doors open at 8. I think like the cover is 5. But they have that going on, so I'm gonna definitely start checking that out. So that, as far as poetry, that might where you know you might catch me. I am working on a new series at the Hillhouse Kaufman Center. that I'm hoping to start somewhat in the spring, that will be kind of inspired from my one-man show where, I tell some stories about myself. I thought it would be interesting to find people in the city that, in the political field or in the artistic field that are out there and they're known for what they do, but we don't necessarily know the people behind the talent or the business. So I thought it would be kind of cool to get a setting where it's kind of like a living room. They sit in a chair and, play some music and they share a story or two, about themselves or their lives, and also bring some artists that I know, that while they're sharing their stories, maybe they'll play a saxophone, maybe they'll play a drum, maybe they'll play some piano, something like that. In a nice, cool, relaxing,
setting. Improvisationally,
right.
They might embellish the story.
Exactly. That's what I want to kind of create. So I'm currently working on that now. So I'm hoping that will go up like March or April.
If you would like some help recording those, let us know. Recording them, putting them online. I could also see you were wanting them to remain ethereal and live and not going anywhere else. But just let us know. We'd love to help you. I could just imagine. I think that's a really good idea. They say a lot of great ideas come at the intersection of very established things. So you've got the, well-established art of storytelling and spoken word, but and you've got the well-established fact that there are people that are very interesting and lots of great background and compelling, but they may not tell their stories in that kind of setting. So there's some lightning there, I think.
Right.
You can also catch Ezra. He will be at the Children's Museum Saturday, Sunday, and Monday coming up, the 17th. 18th and 19th
yes.
of January. And I think at that time you'll be sharing stories from a play
yes.
called Book of Ezra.
Yes. I had a premiere of my first solo show, Book of Ezra, October of last year. Ran at the Pittsburgh Playwrights Theater Company. It was directed by Mark Clayton Southers. And it was something that I had been, I don't say walking around with, but something that I had in my mind for a couple years of, like I said, I've always kind of been a storyteller, and I always had some friends or associates after hearing some stories that I would share, they were like, hey, you probably need to write a book, or, you need a movie, you need, something. And so one day, I did start kind of, what actually kind of sparked it was, I was kind of thinking, like, well, what stories am I going to tell? What stories would be interesting to tell? I don't want to just tell stories just to tell stories. And one day I was making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And I made the sandwich, and I bit into it, and I was like, ugh, this is nasty. And I turned the sandwich around so the jelly could be on top and the peanut butter on the bottom, and I ate it, and then it tastes good. And so I said, well, wait a minute, what? Why do I do this? So I sat back and I kept thinking, because I've been doing this for a long time. I'm like, here I am in my upper 30s where I still do this. So I kept thinking, and I came across a memory of a time where I had a cousin where I think maybe I was about 8. And I had a cousin who was 2 years older than me, and we were in the kitchen on a Saturday afternoon, and we were making some peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And at this time, I had no preference of jelly on the top or peanut butter on the bottom. It was just, didn't matter. But this day I was about to eat it, and my cousin stops me and he says, mm-mm. And he turns my sandwich over and says, nah, I eat mine with the jelly on top. And I said, okay. But from that day on, I've been eating my peanut butter and jelly sandwiches that way. And I was like, well, why did that last so long with me where I still do that? And because it affected so many areas. Like, where now I don't like peanut butter alone. Like, I don't like peanut butter cookies, Reese cups, Reese pieces. None of that stuff is disgusting to me. I don't know how people spoon and just eat peanut butter, but I can eat peanut butter and jelly, but the peanut butter has to be on the bottom. If somebody gives me a celery stick and just puts peanut butter on it, No. But if you put raisins on top of it, I'll eat it. But that makes sense because raisins and grapes, which makes jelly, and it's on top of the peanut butter. So, like, I could still eat it that way, you know?
How did that imprint? I mean, I understand. Right. It's like what something stayed with you as a child.
Right. So it made me start just thinking of other moments that I've kind of decided were defining moments in my life that I thought like kind of defined certain reasons why I do what I do, why I don't do what I do. And all these stories started coming out. And I would just grab a recorder, and whenever the story would come out, I would just let the story go. I might had an intention to tell a story a certain way, but as I told it, it would go somewhere else, you know, and I wouldn't stop it and say, no, that's not where I didn't want it to go. I would just let it go, you know, and then I would go and I would listen to it. And I'm like, oh, that's four monologues right there, you know, and I would go and I would type them up. And then I would share them with my director. And he sent me down south to work with a playwright and a director to help me pull out some more stories, and came back and we worked on the script, and he was going to do a festival of some plays, but then he said he wanted to have my show open up as, you know, to open up his last season. So the book Ezra came, and the premise is I kind of made the premise where my stories went from 8 to 15, and my son, I have a son named Amaru, and he was about to turn 15. And I looked at certain things that was going on in my life at 15. I looked at his life at 15, and there were some commonalities. And I was also realizing how many stories I haven't shared with him, you know, based around, you know, my youth. You know, so I didn't, you know, there's times where I think, like, you know, I can look at my parent and just think mom, but my mom was a human who had stories and went through things and stuff like that. So I thought, you know, well, how cool would it be, you know, to maybe give him a book about his dad written by his dad, you know, and that he can actually look at stories of how his dad developed through those same years that he's going through now and see how much we can relate. And maybe he can learn to do some of the things I did or not do some of the things I did. And so the story is kind of like with papers all around my living room and me picking up a piece of paper, and I just begin to tell the story and act it out. And after I get done telling the story and acting it out, there's a podium with a binder open, and I sit the story in the binder. So you watch me create the book, you know. And at the end, there's footage of me meeting up with him at the end of the play and giving him the book. So that's the book Ezra, part one. So there'll be a part two and a part three.
That is a great image to think through, and I can see that on stage. But if you're just joining us, this is Leslie Ezra Smith. I think we linked to your Facebook page from our website. You can check him out there or Google him to learn more about him. We have time if you'd like to share something else with us, and I'll let you set it up. And I also, this will be our last chance to talk. I just want to thank you for being here. It's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. This is pretty cool. Pretty cool show. And I'm excited because next week also is my birthday as well, January 18th. So I'll be here performing. So that's a pretty cool birthday gift for myself.
We just may sing to you.
This scene is I wanted to write something kind of dealing with self-esteem. And so this is called I Finally Got Her Number. So it goes like this. I finally got her number. Finally got it. I used to see her every morning at the bus stop on my way to school. And I walk up to her and we're standing at the bus stop, and I say, hello. Hello. How you doing? Good. Great. That was it. That's all I wanted. I didn't want any other response. I just wanted to say hello and see if she'll say something nice back. Like, that was it. I didn't really like expect to get her phone number or anything. I just wanted to be able to say something and see if she'll say something nice back to me, because I thought, it's kind of nice when people talk nice to you, and people talking nice to me. I mean, that was very, very important to me at this time. I'm like 14 and stuff, and I'm a little unsure about myself at this time, and I always thought, like, it would be nice, because if people talk nice to you, then people believe that you're lovable, because you're not going to talk to people nice that you don't think that is, not lovable. Like, no, you only speak nice to lovable people. And, so I wanted, some kind words or some niceness, because at this time I thought I was ugly. I did. I thought I was ugly, and ugly people weren't lovable. Ugly people were teased and they were ridiculed, and it just seemed like it was okay to do so. It was okay to tease ugly people publicly and privately. Like, I used to see it all the time on TV and discussions and jokes, and it just seemed like it was okay. And so, I just wanted somebody to say something nice to me. I was teased. I had these big ears. They used to call me Dumbo, and these bushy eyebrows and stuff. I remember one time I was in class, and I think I was about in the fourth or the fifth grade, and I'm in class, and the girls in the classroom, they wrote down all the boys' names. They wrote down all the boys' names, and they rated all the boys, like, with a scale from 1 to 10, and 1 was the ugliest. That was the lowest, and 10 was the highest, or that's the cutest. So they do the little rating system, and the paper goes all around the classroom, and then one of the boys get in, and he run back to the desk, and we sit down, and everybody's looking for their name, and they're like, yeah, I got a 10, yeah, yeah, and they're high-fiving each other and everything. Oh, I got a 10.5, wow, wow. And I get the paper, and I finally get in. I'm like, oh, my goodness, and my heart is beating fast, and my hands are sweaty, and I get the letter, and I run, and I start searching for my name, oh, my goodness, where's my name, and then I find it, and when I find it, I look at my score, and it says -1, a -1, was I that ugly? I mean, I was so hurt, I was so embarrassed. And the other kids, they saw it, and they're pointing at me, and they're laughing, and I laughed too, trying to play it off like it didn't bother me, but it did. It did. And the only reason they stopped laughing is because the school bell rang, and I held in my tears, and I walked in to the next class. So the next day, I decided to talk to homegirl again, just to see if her kindness was real. Hello? Hello? Your sweater looks nice. Well, thank you. You're welcome. I was so nervous. But I was playing it like I was cool. Like, I was, I felt like I was Clark Kent trying to talk to Lois Lane. Like, that's how I felt. Like, I was Clark Kent trying to talk to Lois Lane. And she has no idea I'm Superman. Like, I think that's why I used to like Superman. Like, I used to watch it. I'm like, man, she has no idea that this bumbling fool with the glasses, like, I wear glasses, like he's really Superman. Like, that's, she gonna need him one day. Yep, that's how I used to feel. Like, yep, she gonna need me one day. But right now, I don't feel that I have any superpowers right now. So until then, she's just gonna have to deal with Clark Kent. So, what's your name? Andrea. Nice. My name is Leslie. Leslie? You mean like a girl's name? That's another cause of my insecurity. My name is Leslie. I'm already being teased that I like a little girl, and on top of that, my name is Leslie. So I say, whoa, hold on. Leslie is a unisex name, right? Boys and girls can use the name Leslie. There's the actor Leslie Nielsen, right? So anyway, the bus comes and we get on the bus and we sit next to each other and we're quiet. We're not saying anything to each other. And I'm looking at her. She's not looking at me. And okay, we get off the bus and we're still quiet and we're walking to the school and we're still quiet. And next thing you know, she turns around and she says, "So do you want my phone number?" Yeah. So she pulls out a piece of paper and a pen and she writes her phone number down and she hands it to me and she says, "Well, call me after school, okay?" All right. All right. I'll give you a call. And she turns around and she walks into the school and I sit there and I look at the piece of paper and I can't believe it. Oh my goodness, she gave me her number. She gave me her number without me even asking for it. Oh my goodness. I mean, it was already cool to ask a girl for a phone number and for her to give it to you, like after you asked, but for a female to walk up to you and give you your number without you asking, well, that was just crazy. Like, that was that. Oh, that just means she must really like you. Like, oh my goodness. You know why? Because she's breaking tradition. Right? She's breaking tradition. Girls aren't supposed to walk up to boys to give them. I'm like, she's breaking tradition. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm looking at her phone number and I'm, so that means she's willing to break tradition. She's willing to break tradition for me? That's the story.
Leslie Ezra Smith, thank you for being here. And thank you, Zori.